So we're continuing chapter 21 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. December arrived, bringing with it more snow and a positive avalanche of homework for the fifth years. Ron and Hermione's prefect duties also became more and more onerous as Christmas approached. They were called on to supervise the decoration of the castle. "You try putting up tinsel when Peeves has got the other end and is trying to strangle you with it," said Ron. "And to watch over the first and second years, spending their break times inside the bitter cold. Inside because of the bitter cold. And their cheeky little snot rags, you know, we definitely weren't that rude when we were in first year," said Ron. "And to patrol the corridors in shifts with Argus Filch, who suspected that the holiday spirit might show itself in an outbreak of wizard duels. He's got dungs for brains, that's that one," said Ron furiously. They were so busy that Hermione had stopped knitting elf hats and was fretting that she was down to her last three. "All those poor elves I haven't set free yet, having to stay over during Christmas because there aren't enough hats." Harry, who had not the heart to tell her that Dobby was taking everything she made, bent lower over his History of Magic essay. In any case, he didn't want to think about Christmas. For the first time in his school career, he very much wanted to spend the holidays away from Hogwarts. Between his Quidditch ban and worry about whether or not Hagrid was going to be put on probation, he felt highly resentful toward the place at the moment. The only thing he really looked forward to were the DA meetings, and they would have to stop over the holidays, as nearly everybody in the DA would be spending the time with their families. Hermione was going skiing with her parents, something that greatly amused Ron, who had never heard of muggles strapping narrow strips of wood to their feet to slide down the mountains. Ron, meanwhile, was going home to the Burrow. Harry endured several days of jealousy before Ron, in response to Harry asking how Ron was going to get home for Christmas, said, "But you're coming too, didn't I say? Mum wrote and told me to invite you weeks ago." Hermione rolled her eyes, but Harry's spirits soared. Thought of Christmas at the Burrow was truly wonderful, and only slightly marred by Harry's guilty feeling about whether he would not be able to spend the holidays with Sirius. He wondered whether he could possibly persuade Mrs. Weasley to invite his godfather for the festivities too, but apart from the fact that he doubted whether Dumbledore would permit Sirius to leave Grimmauld Place, he couldn't help but feel that Mrs. Weasley might not want him. They were so often at loggerheads. Sirius had not contacted Harry at all since his last appearance in the fire, and although that Harry knew, with Umbridge on the constant watch, it would be unwise to attempt to contact him, he didn't like to think of Sirius alone in his mother's old home, perhaps pulling out a lonely cracker with Creature. Harry arrived early in the room of requirement for the last DA meeting before the holidays and was very glad, because when the lamps had burst into light, he saw that Dobby had taken it upon himself to decorate the place for Christmas. He could tell the elf had done it, because nobody else would have strung 100 golden baubles from the ceiling, each showing a picture of Harry's face and bearing the legend, "Have a very Harry Christmas." Harry had just only managed to get the last of them down before the door creaked open, and Luna Lovegood entered, looking dreamy as always. "Hello," she said vaguely, looking around at what remained of the decorations. "These are nice. Did you put them up?" "No," said Harry, "it was Dobby the house elf." "Mistletoe," Luna said dreamily. Pointing at a large clump of white berries almost over Harry's head. He jumped out from under it. "Good thinking," said Luna very seriously. "It's often infected with nargles." Harry was saved the necessity of asking what nargles were by the arrival of Angelina, Katie, and Alicia. All three of them were breathless and looked very cold. "Well," said Angelina dully, pulling off her cloak and throwing it into a corner, "we've replaced you." "Replaced me?" said Harry blankly. "You and Fred and George," she said impatiently. "We've got another seeker." "Who?" asked Harry quickly. "Ginny Weasley," said Katie. Harry gaped at her. "Yeah, I know," said Angelina, pulling out her wand and flexing her arm. "But she's pretty good, actually. Nothing on you, of course," she said, throwing him a very dirty look. "But as we can't have you..."
"Right."
Harry bit back the retort he was longing to utter. Did she imagine for a second he didn't regret his expulsion from the team 100 times more than she did? And what about the beaters, he asked, trying to keep his voice even. Andrew Kirk, said Alicia without enthusiasm, and Jack Sloper. Neither of them are brilliant, but compared to the rest of the idiots who turned up. The arrival of Ron, Hermione, and Neville brought this depressing discussion to an end within 5 minutes, and the room was full enough to prevent him from seeing Angelina's burning, reproachful looks. Okay, he said, calling them all to order. I thought this evening we should go over the things we've done so far. This is the last meeting before the holidays, and there's no point starting anything new right before a 3-week break. We're not doing anything new, said Zachariah Smith in a disgusted whisper loud enough to carry through the room. If I'd have known that, I wouldn't have come. We're all really sorry Harry didn't tell you then, said Fred loudly. Several people snickered. Harry saw Cho laughing and felt the familiar swooping sensation in his stomach, as though he had missed a step going downstairs. By the way, assuming you're still up, I just want to make sure that you close your computer before you go to sleep, because in case someone sees you on Skype and calls you, then it'll ring and it'll wake you up and that won't be good.
Yeah.
Okay. I love you, Kitty. We can practice in pairs, said Harry. We'll start with the impediment jinx, just for 10 minutes. Then we can get out the cushions and try stunning again. They all divided up obediently. Harry partnered Neville as usual. The room was full of intermittent cries of impedimentum. People froze for a minute or so, during which their partners would stare aimlessly around the room, watching other pairs at work, then would unfreeze and take their turn at the jinx. Neville had improved beyond all recognition. After a while, when Harry had unfrozen 3 times in a row, he and Neville joined Ron and Hermione again so that he could walk around the room. And watch the others. When he passed Cho, she beamed at him. He resisted the temptation to walk past her several times more.
Remind you of anyone?
Maybe. Yeah. After 10 minutes, that was a fun exam, I think.
Yeah.
After 10 minutes on the impediment jinx, they laid out cushions all over the floor and started practicing stunning again. Space was really too confined to allow them to all work on the spell at once. Half of the group observed the others for a while, and then swapped over. Harry felt himself positively swelling with pride as he watched them all. True, Neville did stun Padma Patil rather than Dean, at whom he'd been aiming, but it was a much closer miss than usual, and everybody else had made enormous progress. At the end of an hour, Harry called a halt. You're getting really good, he said, beaming at all of them. When we get back from the holidays, we can start doing some of the big stuff, maybe even Patronuses. There was a murmur of excitement. The room began to clear in the usual twos and threes. Most people wished Harry a happy Christmas, and they went. Feeling cheerful, he collected up the cushions with Ron and Hermione and then stacked them neatly away. Ron and Hermione left before he did. He hung back a little, because Cho was still there, and he was hoping to receive a Merry Christmas from her. No, you go on, he heard her say to her friend Marietta, and his heart gave a jolt that seemed to take it into the region of his Adam's apple. He pretended to be straightening the cushion pile. He was quite sure they were alone now and waited for her to speak. Instead, he heard a hearty sniff. He turned and saw Cho standing in the middle of the room, tears pouring down her face. What? He asked. He didn't know what to do. She was simply standing there, crying silently. What's up? He said feebly. She shook her head and wiped her eyes on her sleeve. I'm sorry, she said thickly. I suppose it's just learning all the stuff. It makes me wonder whether, if he'd have known it all, he'd still be alive. Harry's heart sank right back past its usual spot and settled somewhere down around his navel. He ought to have known. She wanted to talk about Cedric. He did know this stuff, Harry said heavily. He was really good at it, or he never could have gotten to the middle of that maze. But if Voldemort really wants to kill you, you don't stand a chance. She hiccuped at the sound of Voldemort's name, but stared at Harry without flinching. "You survived when you were just a baby," she said quietly. "Yeah, well," said Harry wearily, moving toward the door. "I don't know why, nor does anyone else, so it's nothing to be proud of." "Oh, don't go," said Cho, sounding tearful again. "I'm really sorry to get all upset like this. I didn't mean to." And she hiccuped again. She was very pretty, even when her eyes were red and puffy. Harry felt thoroughly miserable. He'd have been so pleased just with a Merry Christmas. "I know how horrible it must be for you," she said, mopping her eyes on her sleeve again. "Me mentioning Cedric, when you saw him die. I suppose you just want to forget about it." Harry didn't say anything to this. It was quite true, but he felt heartless saying it. "You're a really good teacher, you know," said Cho, with a watery smile. "I've never been able to stun anything before." "Thanks," said Harry, awkwardly. They looked at each other for a long moment. Harry felt a burning desire to run from the room, and at the same time, a complete inability to move his feet. "Mistletoe," said Cho quietly, pointing at the ceiling over his head. "Yeah," said Harry. His mouth was very dry. "It's probably full of nargles, though." "What are nargles?" "No idea," said Harry. She had moved closer. His brain seemed to have been stunned. "You'd have to ask Luna. Cho made a funny noise halfway between a sob and a laugh. She was even nearer him now. He could have counted the freckles on her nose. "I really like you, Harry." He couldn't think. A tingling sensation was spreading throughout him, paralyzing his arms, legs, and brain. She was much too close. He could see every tear clinging to her eyelashes. And I think we'll stop there.
Hey, no way!
No, but that's where it stops. It's a break.
No.
So what you're saying is you're super awake still.
Yes.
You want them to kiss, don't you?
I just want to hear what he tells them. I know what he's going to tell them.
Okay.
Later.
He returned to the common room half an hour later to find Hermione and Ron in the best seats by the fire. Nearly everybody else had gone to bed. Hermione was writing a very long letter. She had already filled half of a roll of parchment, which was dangling from the edge of the table. Ron was lying on the hearth rug, trying to finish his transfiguration homework. "What kept you?" he asked, as Harry sank into the armchair next to Hermione's. Harry didn't answer. He was in a state of shock. Half of him wanted to tell Ron and Hermione what had just happened, but the other half wanted to take the secret with him to the grave. "Are you all right, Harry?" Hermione asked, peering at him over the tip of her quill. Harry gave a half-hearted shrug. In truth, he didn't know whether he was all right or not. "What's up?" said Ron, hoisting himself up on his elbow to get a clear view of Harry. "What happened?" Harry didn't quite know how to set about telling them, and still wasn't quite sure whether he wanted to. Just as he had decided not to say anything, Hermione took matters out of his hands. "Is it Cho?" she asked in a businesslike way. "Did she corner you after the meeting?" Numbly surprised, Harry nodded. Ron snickered, breaking off when Hermione caught his eye. "So, what did she want?" he asked in a mock casual voice. "She," Harry began rather hoarsely. He cleared his throat and tried again. "Did you kiss?" asked Hermione briskly. Ron sat up so fast that he sent his ink bottle flying all over the rug. Disregarding this completely, he stared avidly at Harry. "Well?" he demanded. Harry looked from Ron's expression of mingled curiosity and hilarity to Hermione's slight frown and nodded. "Ha!" Ron made a triumphant gesture with his fist and went into a raucous peal of laughter that made several timid-looking second-years over by the window jump. A reluctant grin spread over Harry's face as he watched Ron rolling around on the hearth rug. Hermione gave Ron a look of deep disgust and returned to her letter. "Well," Ron said finally, looking up at Harry, "how was it?" Harry considered for a moment. "Wet," he said truthfully. Ron made a noise that might have indicated jubilation or disgust. It was hard to tell. "Because she was crying," Harry continued heavily. "Oh," said Ron, his smile fading slightly. "Are you that bad at kissing?" "I don't know," said Harry, who hadn't considered this and immediately felt rather worried. "Maybe I am." Of course you're not, said Hermione absently, still scribbling away at her letter. How do you know? Asked Ron in a sharp voice. Because Cho spends half her time crying these days, said Hermione vaguely. She does it at mealtime, in the loos, all over the place. You think a bit of kissing would cheer her up, said Ron, grinning. Ron, said Hermione in a dignified voice, dipping the point of her quill into her ink pot. You are the most insensitive wart I've ever had the misfortune to meet. What's that supposed to mean, said Ron indignantly. What sort of person cries while kissing someone else? Yes, said Harry, looking slightly desperate. Well, who does? Hermione looked at the pair of them with an almost pitying expression on her face. Don't you understand how Cho's feeling at the moment? She asked. No, said Harry and Ron together. Hermione sighed and laid down her quill. Well, obviously, she's feeling very sad because of Cedric dying. Then I expect she's feeling confused because she liked Cedric, and now she likes Harry, and she can't work out who she likes best. Then she'll be feeling guilty, thinking it's an insult to Cedric's memory to be kissing Harry at all. And she'll be worrying about what everyone else might say if she starts going out with Harry. And she probably can't work out what her feelings toward Harry are anyway, because he was the one who was with Cedric when Cedric died. So that's all very mixed up and painful. Oh, and she's going to be thrown off the Ravenclaw Quidditch team because she's been flying so badly. A slightly stunned silence greeted the end of this speech, and then Ron said, One person can't feel all that at once. They'd explode. Just because you've got the emotional range of a teaspoon, doesn't mean we all have, said Hermione nastily, picking up her quill again. She was the one who started it, said Harry. I wouldn't have. She just sort of came at me. Next thing I knew, she's crying all over me. I didn't know what to do. Don't blame you, mate, said Ron, looking very alarmed at the thought. You just had to be nice to her, said Hermione, looking up anxiously. You were, weren't you? Well, said Harry, in an unpleasant heat creeping up on his face, I sort of patted her on the back a bit. Hermione was looking as though she was restraining herself from rolling her eyes with extreme difficulty. I suppose it could have been worse, she said. Are you going to see her again? I'll have to, won't I? Said Harry. We've got DA meetings, haven't we? You know what I mean, said Hermione impatiently. Harry said nothing. Hermione's words opened up a whole new vista of frightening possibilities. He tried to imagine going somewhere with Cho, Hogsmeade, maybe, being alone with her for hours at a time. Of course, she would have been expecting him to ask her out after what just happened. The thought made his stomach clench painfully. Oh well, said Hermione distantly, buried in her letter once more. You'll have plenty of opportunities to ask her. But if he doesn't want to ask her, said Ron, who had been watching Harry with a slightly unusually shrewd expression on his face. Don't be silly, Hermione said vaguely. Harry has liked her for ages, haven't you, Harry? He didn't answer. Yes, he had liked Cho for ages, but whenever he had imagined a scene involving the two of them, it had always featured a Cho who was enjoying herself, as opposed to a Cho who was sobbing uncontrollably onto his shoulder. Who are you writing to, anyways? Ron said to Hermione, trying to reach the bit of parchment now trailing on the floor. Hermione hitched it up out of sight. Victor. Crumb? How many other Victors do we know? And I think we'll stop there.
I hope you like that, Kitten Boo. You're a very sweet kitty.
And I want to kiss you very much.
You're so adorable, and I love you so much. Sleep well. Good night.